Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Assembly Member Deborah Glick, a Democrat who represents New York's 66th Assembly District in Manhattan, including Greenwich Village. Welcome, Assembly Member Glick. How you doing?
Thank you so much for having me, Alan. I'm a big fan, and WAMC does so much great work. It's an honor to be with you.
That is so nice of you to say. And I want to begin by asking you for your analysis of what's going on.
Well, you know, I think that we are obviously in perilous times, and we are, you know, very appreciative of media outlets that inform the public and encourage the public to pay attention. And that's what WAMC does.
You were just at an event with Mayor Eric Adams. What was the event all about?
Well, yeah, I was a little late, and I appreciate your forbearance. It was the announcement of the appointment of a new commissioner to the Fire Department of New York City, and it was, for the first time, a woman leading the department. She has been a part of the department for many, many years and has done really great work and certainly deserved it, but not everybody who deserves the appointment gets it. So it was quite a celebration, and it was happening in my district, so I was very thrilled to be there.
So, Deborah Glick, where is your district?
The district is in Lower Manhattan. We have the village from the Hudson River over to the east side of First Avenue, and then it goes south, including NoHo, SoHo, Tribeca, and a little area around City Hall. So it's called the 66th Assembly District, but I call it heaven.
So we've worried for a long time about what the events are that lead to this kind of a summation. Can you sort of tell us?
Well, the district is a very vibrant one, but like everywhere, we've had our struggles, especially with the pandemic. And the fire department has been just so important to us because Lower Manhattan has faced in the last, 20 years, the attack on the Trade Center, where 343 fire department members, firefighters, lost their lives. Yeah. We have the Fire Museum, which is a great place to take kids. We are also, we faced Superstorm Sandy. And in all of those instances, we've had the help and assistance, as all of New Yorkers have had over the years, from the fire department. But we also are, you know, a center for higher education. We have the new school. We have NYU, Cooper Union, Pace, Borough Manhattan Community College, which is a part of the City University. So in a very small, tightly bounded community, because there are rivers on either side of Manhattan, we are a great college town, which most people don't think of New York in that way.
Having been a PhD in the region, I certainly know how important it is that we knew what was going on and why. So how is the mayor doing?
Well, the mayor has, has a lot on his plate, and the pandemic has created a lot of extra problems. We have had no tourism, which was a big part of our economy. We had a lot of retail businesses go out. We don't have everybody back in their offices, and so the foot traffic that's usually spurs a lot of economic activity, isn't happening at the same level, didn't have any tourists for 2 years. They're starting to come back, but it's not quite at the same level as it was before. And on top of it, the pandemic seems to have created all across the country episodes of crime, some of it based on mental health issues, and some of it based on economic desperation, but also just sort of general craziness, like people driving too fast and recklessly. That never did before. There are plenty of places where people say, you know, I can't even believe how fast people are driving in a crowded corridor. So I think the mayor is trying to be a cheerleader for the city, at the same time working on issues around homelessness, mental health, and trying to jumpstart an economy that, you know, in New York has lagged the country. And I think some of that is because it is a congested place. In other places, people have more room, and so they're more comfortable coming back to work. Here, they have to take a crowded subway, and they're not so sure they want to do it. So the mayor is, you know, working hard, and, you know, with it's fits and starts because he's not in control of many things like everybody coming back to work.
So polls are showing a 4-11 point lead for Hochul, but isn't that the race closer than it should be in Blue State, New York?
Well, there's no question that the governor has done an incredible job in a rather short time, you know, in a rather abrupt start to her administration. But she's very familiar with the state because as lieutenant governor, she traveled everywhere. And so she's very familiar with the issues and is really focused on working. And I have to say, from a legislative point of view, that the attitude of let's get things done, but let's do it with in a collaborative way is a little bit new. And as Democrats, we don't do a good job of messaging. And when you're running the state and you have to do things, it's always harder than just being the candidate. The opposition can just be out every day throwing brickbats. But you still, if you are the governor, you still have to do the governing. And while you're running, I give her high points for doing both and having the kind of incredible energy that she has. And as chair of higher ed, I am incredibly grateful to her. We had the best higher education budget in 12 years. And she did not play the game, the usual game, the Albany game of, I'm going to make cuts and then you're going to negotiate to get back to where you were. She looked at higher ed as the future of the state, and we need an educated workforce. And she went about providing for our opportunity programs, which support academically and economically disadvantaged kids. And we were able to not only, she added money to that, she added money to SUNY, our state university, and our city university, so they could hire more full-time faculty. And for the first time, our tuition assistance program has a component for part-time students. And as you know, many, many students work full-time and go to school part-time. And so now they actually will have financial support to do that. So I'm very excited about the future, and I think the governor will win. It's tighter than it should be, but that's true in a lot of places. A lot of places you have dreadful candidates, anti-choice candidates, anti-democracy candidates, and they still are neck and neck with solid, pro-choice, thoughtful, and hardworking legislators. So I don't really get it.
So how is it that in Blue Slate, New York, the governor's race is between a centrist Democrat and a Trumper that are so close?
Well, you know, I think that there are a lot of things that can account for that. I think coming out of the pandemic, people are very stressed. They're economically concerned. Not everybody has recovered to the same extent as people perhaps at the top of the economic ladder. And I think that it is axiomatic for Republicans to play on people's fear of crime. Now, there is crime. There's more crime than there was before, but there's less crime in New York than there is in other parts of the country. But you know what? People don't care about that. They care about, I'm afraid, and I've been told I better be very afraid, so now I'm really afraid, and it's very hard to just give people cold statistics about improvements in getting guns off the street. You have a governor who has added many gun safety measures, and you have somebody who has voted against raising the age at when a teenager could get an assault weapon. You explain it to me how the people can see the facts and make the choice. He is, all of the Republicans are running away from their anti-choice position, but in the end, he would pick, he's been clear, he would pick an anti-choice health commissioner who would have a lot to say about how resources are provided to family planning clinics. So I believe that in the end, New Yorkers will rally to the governor, who has a great record of bringing jobs that will lead us further into the future. The Micron chip manufacturing that was just announced in Syracuse, over the next several years will bring 50,000 high-paying, good jobs to central New York that's desperate for them. So in the end, I think people will do the right thing, vote for a governor who has a track record, and vote to put the first woman governor elected in New York State back in office.
That's extraordinary. How come? How come it took that long?
Well, it's a big state. It's and even, you know, in past elections, women do very well in jobs that are legislative jobs. They are not seen as executives. And that is part of just a societal bias that people are nervous. And there are some people, not just men, some women, who will not vote for a woman to be the top executive. And that's, you know, just a very slow evolution of our societal consciousness. But I believe that the governor will be reelected, and it's very possible that, you know, the polls have been so all over the place, it's hard to believe polls these days.
So, Deborah Glick, how fuzzy is all of this and why? In other words, is this business of who we elect tied to whether somebody is a woman or a man?
Well, I think we used to have shared reality. That has eroded. And so I'm not putting this all on the media, but I'm just saying that when I was growing up, you had a very limited number of stations, but they were very authoritative in their, they only gave you the news, the straight news, and those were people that you believed that those were the facts, and we all believed in the same facts. In the last maybe 20 years, there are many more media outlets, social media, which is totally unvetted. Obviously, you all do fact-checking in regular media, but social media is anybody can say whatever they want. And the former president would preface every crazy thing that he said by saying, people are saying, who people, what people? He could never designate who it was. It was what was in his mind, but he would validate it by saying, people are talking about, or people believe, and he would repeat it over and over again. And you know, repetition in marketing, and that's what he was, a marketer, is very powerful. And he would just repeat the same nonsense, and over time, a growing number of people would embrace it. And, you know, America has always had a love affair with a con man and a grifter and a, you know, snake oil salesman. So we, you know, we have ourselves to blame to some extent for the situation we're in. But the big lie around a stolen election is pernicious and dangerous to democracy. And this democracy is on the ballot. Basic rights that we have counted on for decades have been overturned. And that's just the start of it. They started with abortion, but they're not stopping. They're coming after your contraceptives, folks. So regardless of what your religious beliefs are, you know that as an American, you shouldn't be imposing them on someone else.
Let's talk about the $4.2 billion Environmental Bond Act and people voting for it or not. What's likely to happen here? Do people care?
Well, I think a lot of people are concerned about climate change, and we see it everywhere. We had a drought in much of the West, but then it came to New York, where we generally have a very wet climate. So it's impacting our food supply. It's impacting people. So especially young people, they realize some of us may be closer to the end than we are to the beginning, but they're at the beginning, and they are very concerned about what their future is. So I think that young people, if they get out and vote, which is always a question, will be excited about it. But everybody should vote for it, because it will give us the resources to fix water supplies, to upgrade water treatment plants. It will provide resources for electric charging stations. People are anxious to get off of their gas-powered cars, but in plenty of places, their concern is, well, where am I going to plug it in? How do I charge it? So the Bond Act will provide resources for that and other clean energy technology. And it's so I think that people will see it and will recognize it. But in some places, it may be on the back of the ballot. And that's always the concern. If you vote on one side, check that there isn't something else on the backside that you need to vote for. And the Environmental Bond Act is crucial to ensuring that New York's environment and our ability to clean the environment and to provide technology that will make us a more stable economy and a more stable environment. And we need it. There's dozens of things in it that will provide for local communities as well as larger projects that will expand broadband, because there are a lot of places where we still have people struggling to get online. And that hurts small businesses. They can't be part of that e-commerce if they can't have consistent access to the internet.
So let's talk a little bit about voting in New York. I don't think we've talked about that too much. Are there restrictions you're worried about?
Well, you know, New York has made steps towards making voting easier, and that's good. We have early voting is starting this weekend, and we've only been doing that for the last year or so, which many other states have had early voting for a very long time. We lost an opportunity to have absentee ballots for no reason. You could just order one, not that you're out of the state or you're sick. We had a dispensation because of COVID for a couple of years, and that made it easier for everybody to vote. And I will say that our colleagues on the other side of the aisle in the Republican Party do not support absentee voting. They used to when it benefited them, but they no longer think it is to their advantage, so they're opposed to it. But that in other states, their rate of compliance with voting is much higher because they provide additional opportunities for people to vote more readily. So we have work to do. I don't think that we're going to see the kind of bully tactics that are popping up in other states. At least I hope not. Maybe I'm being too optimistic. But the concerted effort to deny people, particularly poor people, people of color, older people, disabled people, preventing them from voting is not only anti-democratic, but it's a very pernicious eroding of democracy activity.
What about term limits? Are we doing enough?
Well, you know, I'm in office, and I believe we have term limits. We call them elections. And artificial limitations, I believe, force people to get out of, well, not only to leave office prematurely, but if you have a four-year term, as people in New York City have, and they only have two terms, when they are in their fifth or sixth year, they're beginning to look for their next job. And they may not be doing, making choices that are purely based on what they should be doing for their constituency versus what their eyes are on for a new position and how that begins to inform the choices they make when they're voting or making decisions when it comes to the budget. So I think that people think that it's an that term limits is an easy way to ensure that we have turnover, but the real easy way is for everybody to register to vote and vote when you have the opportunity, not to artificially limit the participation of some people. Now, admittedly, I am a long-serving member of this legislature, so it sounds very self-serving, but I have seen the negative impact of people being prematurely forced out of office when their constituency is not unhappy with them, and it forces them to make, I think, other decisions based on their own interest.
Okay, so Deborah Glick, the question then is about leadership in both houses. Do you feel that we turn over leadership positions to enough people while you've been there? And I know this is a tough question because you don't want to say anything that will tick anybody off. But do we stick to the same old enough or too much?
Well, I don't think so. I think that the people who aspire and achieve leadership only retain it if they are listening to the members. And I would say that the current leadership in both houses, you know, they don't tell you what to do. They listen to, believe me, an inordinate amount of conversation and in some instances whining from the members to decide what is the consensus for the conference. And then they try to deliver that. And, you know, they're like the chief negotiator. You don't have 82 people negotiating a contract. You have your leadership team negotiating it. So I think that we have very good leadership in that it listens to the members and then makes a decision. And, you know, I would just say that under the current leadership, we have codified Roe v. Wade in New York State. We've banned conversion therapy, which tries to change somebody's sexuality, which is not possible. We have added speed cameras in New York City, which we desperately needed. And we have provided for education, health care, and supported teachers in a way that previously had not been supported. So I think the leadership is doing a great job, but they only succeed if they're listening to the members.
Well, why aren't you the leader?
You couldn't pay me enough.
That's funny. Okay, so you know a lot about education. So what about the college students voting on campus? You think they'll have enough impact on the elections, or do you think they just walk away until a different time?
I think that both climate, which is a big motivator for young voters, and the overturning of Roe v. Wade has been a shock to them. I think that they were just assumed that that was a right that had been in place for 50 years, and now they're worried about what other rights could be swept away. So I think we may see a higher turnout of young people, and I think they will decidedly split for the Democrats. They're also concerned about gun violence. They are the generation that has grown up with active shooter training. And it's a terrible thing for young people to live in that kind of environment. We're afraid that somebody's going to burst into the classroom and spray gunfire everywhere. So I think that they were on the leading edge of gun safety, desperately concerned about climate change, and basic rights, if not for themselves, for their friends and associates. So I think that we're going to see better turnout than we've had in some years. And we did have, when Obama ran, we did see a spike in the turnout by young people. And I think they turned out again against the Trump election. They came out to get rid of Donald Trump. So I think that all of these candidates running on the Trump banner and now are trying to run away from some of their extremist views are going to see that young people are not going to put up with it.
We're out of time. Our guest has been New York State Assembly Member Deborah Glick, and we love her for giving us all of this time. Deborah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Alan.
Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262 or visit us online anytime at WAMC.org or just schedule a podcast anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. Thanks for listening.